Tony, you mentioned neoadjuvant therapy. In what situations do you think about it, and are there trials looking at this?
There are a number of trials looking at this, albeit they're mostly smaller trials, multi-institutional or single institution. The neoadjuvant therapy, I have to be careful about calling this neoadjuvant because most of the studies apply to borderline resectable or unresectable disease rather than clearly resectable disease. In fact, neoadjuvant therapy in pancreas cancer is mostly limited to that subset. And those are patients that are not clearly candidates for a Whipple procedure. And these are the patients that, at least for now, we consider mostly for these neoadjuvant studies, not as much the clearly resectable patient population.
So what would be the kind of situation where somebody would be borderline resectable and converted to resectable? What happens?
So unfortunately, this is not a very clear, it's really surgeon specific, but there are certain specifications about what constitutes a borderline resectable. The clearly resectable patient is, of course, a patient with a pancreatic mass that does not seem to involve vasculature or celiac axis or what have you. The borderline resectable, there's a list of what constitutes a borderline resectable. It's essentially when the surgeon does not feel, upon review of the case, that they can get a clear or a clean margin, albeit some involvement of the portal vasculature or abutment rather than involvement of vasculature, et cetera. And those are the patients that would probably mostly benefit from neoadjuvant therapy to try to shrink the tumor. And this is where FOLFIRINOX, for example, would have a more important role since it does have a response rate that has been stated to be above 30%, which is in pancreas cancer, the highest response rate ever reported. These are the patients that would likely benefit from cytotoxic therapy.
So, Alan, have you had any patients who were converted from non-resectable to resectable? What happened?
We have. This is new territory for us. I personally had two patients. I think our group, we've probably had half a dozen, give or take, who had either borderline or what we thought was clearly unresectable disease based on usually the envelopment of a vessel, 360-degree involvement of a vessel, for example. So by our parameters with radiology, felt to be unresectable, given FOLFIRINOX, and we've converted a number to resectable. And in fact, on one occasion, I got a call from the operating room from the surgeon asking what the hell we'd done because the tumor was like mush, which as opposed to usually the hard ball, this sort of rock-hard tumor. So something's doing there. And in fact, the patients I've had remain durably free of disease, even one is a year out from her resection and is still doing amazingly well. So it's a small sample, and obviously we're picking and choosing who we do it in because it may be the high-performance status patients, but there have been some very surprising results.
I don't know, Axel. Somehow, intuitively, it's harder for me to understand converting unresectable to resectable and pancreatic than, for example, liver mets, where I can understand you shrink them down, you have to take out less tumor, you pull it away from a critical structure. You're not going to sterilize anything with pancreatic cancer, are you?
So it comes down to the vessel involvement and how much vessel involvement you can patch eventually, because nowadays our surgeons have become more aggressive in terms of even vessel reconstruction if they can get tumor-free margins. And I think what Alan pointed to is a new territory, a new frontier. All of a sudden, we have a regimen that actually works and has responses in pancreas cancer. And we're now at a time when we learn how to utilize it. And I can actually see that we're going to approach things like resection of liver metastasis. I had a patient who had a great response to chemotherapy, to FOLFIRINOX, metastatic pancreas cancer, to liver metastasis. The primary tumor almost disappeared, and there was one lesion left in the liver. So eventually, we actually performed a Whipple resection, laparoscopic Whipple, and liver resection. Was this curative? No, but the patient was free of disease for a year. Actually, 15 months. And I don't think we would have done this and seen this in the era of gemcitabine.
So Charlie, have you had any patients who you sent to surgery with liver mets from pancreatic cancer?
Probably not.
Have I done it in my career? I've done it twice years ago, and they both failed miserably.
Matt?
Thinking about doing it in one person, but I haven't done it.
Rich?
I've had some patients that I've inherited after they were taken for a Whipple, and the surgeon said, "Oh, taking this out of the liver is a chip shot, so I'm going to do it and do the Whipple." My experience has been that they've done on the bad end of the spectrum of a bad disease.
So I'm going to go through some of the questions we've gotten about treating pancreatic cancer before we talk about some of the new things that are coming out. First, Bert, in what situations, if any, do you use erlotinib in pancreatic cancer?
I really just don't.
So, Tony, how do you approach obstructive jaundice in metastatic pancreatic cancer, internal stenting versus external drainage?
Frankly, my preference is to do external drainage for most of these patients, specifically the metastatic patients. At least in institutions that have a lot of experience with external drainage, that actually seems to be quite safe and effective. With internal drainage, i.e. RCP and placement of a stent, the challenge is a lot of these block again, especially upon progression, makes it very difficult for us to put them on clinical trials or continue treatment. With external drainage, we had much better success rate, and we're able to monitor and continue to actually challenge.
Charlie?
I'm interested to hear that, Tony, just because at our center, we prefer internal, and in fact, in our studies, we actually exclude patients if the stent can't be internalized because of the high rate of infection with the external drain. So our studies actually prevent patients with pancreatic cancer to go on if they can't get an internal drain.
Well, so the point is that you can do both and it's okay. In my actually experience, I've had much more trouble with the internal stents. They do tend to block and we end up actually having to eventually place external drains. There are certain patients where, you know, the bilirubin is mildly elevated. Clinically, they don't seem to be as obstructed. These patients may benefit from internal drainage. But for those with, which are the majority of the patients with larger tumors, you know, actual impingement, at least in my experience, we've had much better luck with external drainage. And we've actually had very little risk of infection. I mean, we have, as all these institutions do, you know, a very good interventional radiology team that actually follows up these patients very closely. And we've had very, very few problems.